Hello and welcome to another episode of God Made Geek. Geek Made Knives Out. And oh my gosh, what a doozy Knives Out is. My name is John Ross. I am your co-host for today.
And I am Alex Barnes. I'm the other co-host for today.
That is Alex Barnes. I was doing, we can't see each other right now, we're on the phone, but I raised my eyebrows towards my phone as if to give him a visual cue, and he nailed it right on the head.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Barnes, what? Tell me about Knives Out. What are we getting ourselves into here?
Knives Out is a good old-fashioned whodunit. It is like a murder mystery that was directed by the great Rian Johnson that premiered in 2019 to much buzz and critical acclaim. And I am just a sucker for these whodunits, and I ran right out to the theater and loved it just as much as everybody else. And knew it was an instant GMG GMS top tier candidate.
Oh, hands down. I actually got the joy of, I went to see this on my birthday. Amelia, my now fiance, for you listeners at home who weren't aware. Very exciting.
Life update alert.
She took me to see the movie for my birthday, and we watched the first 40 minutes, and she was not feeling well. So we ended up leaving 40 minutes in, and then by later that night, she was feeling better. So she took me back to see it the rest of the way through. So I actually saw the first half of this movie twice, and I gotta say, highly entertaining both times. And the ending had twice the payoff with when you didn't know what was going on. So yes, as Barnes said, this is it's a whodunit. It is directed by Rian Johnson, also written by Rian Johnson, who made Star Wars The Last Jedi, and I'm just going to say it here, folks, that movie is the best of the new Star Wars trilogy. If you want to tweet at me and tell me I'm wrong, I freaking dare you, okay? Yeah. Rian Johnson is a very good writer, very good director. Sorry he hurt your feelings, Luke Skywalker fans. Sorry, I don't know what came out of me, Barnes. That was very antagonistic, but I just had to get it out there.
You had to, and honestly, it's a debate. It's not really a debate. I mean, I'm with you. I agree with you. It's a different for a different time, but yeah, I'm here, and I support you. I support your antagonism. Yes.
So Rian Johnson directed, and what an absolute knockdown, drag-out cast. You have got Daniel Craig in maybe my favorite role ever, playing a gentleman sleuth from a time bygone in Benoit Blanc.
His name's Benoit Blanc.
Oh, man, and I have got a lot of thoughts on Benoit Blanc, Barnes, that I will hold until later in the episode. But, I mean, listen, Ana de Armas, this is one of her... She's been in a few other movies. This is one of her bigger roles to date. Mm-hmm. She's actually going to be a Bond girl, I believe, moving forward. But, man, she is incredible in it. You've got Chris Evans. You've got Jamie Lee Curtis. Michael Shannon. Toni Collette. Lakeith Stanfield. Christopher Plummer. And that's not even to mention, there are other actors and actresses in this film that are kind of up and coming right now that are really talented. I mean, the cast slaps.
Absolutely.
What is the whodunit at the core of this, Barnes? What are we trying to solve here?
Right, and you know, it's got a very interesting on-the-nose way of doing things sometimes, because we talk about the whodunit of the death, basically, of a famous, wealthy crime novelist. I'm talking a guy who writes these types of movies, people, who dies under mysterious circumstances, and then a investigator shows up who was anonymously hired to investigate the case of the death. We have mystery, we have intrigue, we have a family going after the family fortune, we have deception, we have espionage. It's all there, and it's all happening, of course, in this sort of, honestly, think of like the mansion from Clue. It's that. I mean, it's got it all. And honestly, Clue was a very special movie to me, and I'm already on a tangent, but like, it was such an interesting concept to me when I watched the movie, you know, with just back then, and it's always stuck with me, and I've always tried to find that kind of like that thrill and that high of like a whodunit and all that, and this movie made me think of that and makes me just very sentimental about that movie.
Yeah, I think there's always... you see movies all the time where people are like, New York City's one of the characters. And I'm always like, yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of a cop-out. New York City's just iconic, you know? Like, it's not always a character. But I love when a movie makes a space... I mean, like, if you walked into the set of Knives Out not being told what it was, you would know in an instant. It's so recognizable. Every room has these details in the background that you just, like, they're so exciting to look at. And, like, you really feel like you're in kind of an eccentric crime writer's mansion out in the middle of the East Coast, which I don't know how much he was inspired by it, but the Stephen King, I don't know what the interior of his house looks like, but obviously an East Coast horror writer who I know the outside of his house is kind of eclectic, and I kept catching little things where I was like, oh man, this feels like, oh, what if this happened to somebody like Stephen King? But I think what's super fun, every person I mentioned earlier, with the exception of Daniel Craig and Ana de Armas, they all play family members of the deceased. Sorry, Lakeith Stanfield does not play a family member either. But so the murder mystery takes place almost exclusively within a family, with an addition of their housekeeper, played by Ana de Armas. And man, it is like, it's such a cool layer of, it's not just who would be motivated to do this, but like, what are the family dynamics going on here? How does the family feel about each other? The first 20 minutes of the movie are so, I mean, it's literally just different family members recounting the same moments of the night from different perspectives.
Yep.
And it's got some choice, like, comedic moments in it. Like, this isn't really a spoiler because it happens in, like, the first 10 minutes, but Don Johnson, who plays Richard Drysdale, the son-in-law of Harlan Thrombey is the deceased. And Richard Drysdale, played by Don Johnson, Jamie Lee Curtis basically says, I would never tell you that piece of information about my family. And then it cuts to her husband, played by Don Johnson, revealing all of that information to the detectives.
Yep.
So you get this, like, it's a classic, like, show, don't tell. They don't have to say, like, oh, Richard's such a loudmouth, right? All they have to show is that Linda, his wife, is smart enough to say, I'd never reveal that, and then show Richard right after revealing it without a question being asked.
Yeah, it's just got a really, I think they do a really good job also in the opening moments of making sure that you don't discredit anyone. Like, everyone is immediately a suspect and remains that way, and you're kind of expecting a twist, you're expecting something to happen where you're like, okay, even if I shouldn't suspect them, like, maybe that's reason to suspect them, you know, it's just the way that they all, at the end of the day, are like, they're bad people. We're not necessarily murderers, but you're like, these guys all kind of suck. Like, you're not exactly rooting for anyone in particular at the start, and so you have to kind of go through that as well, where it's like, okay, there's no obvious good person here, there's no obvious, like, bad person here. So they do a really good job of balancing things out, so as you go through the events of the movie, you're not necessarily looking at it through the lens of, like, I have to be so actively, like, looking for every minor detail in the background and I have to solve this thing myself. You can just be like, the characters are who they are, and we're at a very even field, so we can just watch this movie.
Exactly, yeah, and that is really tough, I think, to do as a writer, is to create, I mean, I'm looking at it, almost a dozen, just less than a dozen people that are in the family, and to have all of them really feel like full people that have their good moments and their bad moments, and they're all kind of shaded by greed right now because they're part of this family fortune that they've relied on and they don't want to lose, but they all have good moments, right? Like, there's a lot of them that are looking out for Ana de Armas, the housekeeper, and trying to help her, but then when the opportunity arises, they kind of try and take advantage of her. Mm-hmm. And that is just, that's such a tough balance beam to stand on. And, like, man, every character in this movie, even the small ones, really jump off the page onto the screen. You feel like you know a lot about them without seeing a whole lot of them.
Yeah, I think they do a really good job with pacing as well, because there's, like, just a mounting pressure and a mounting tension throughout the movie. But, like, the very last, like, it goes from, like, okay, you think, is this, like, kind of a mono scene type movie? We're going to be, like, again, like Clue, you're in the mansion the whole time. And when it goes beyond that, like, things escalate extremely fast. where it caught me off guard about being like, okay, like, we're gonna, like, we go from just this murder of this one guy to, like, we're gonna see a lot more, like, bad things happen. It's getting, like, borderline creepy scary about just trying to get to the bottom of things. So they did a really good job of, like, once we got to that point, we stayed there, we stayed with that level of intensity until the end of the movie, because I was not expecting just the way that we saw. I mean, but it's very, very hard to be, you know, obviously spoilers, that's the whole movie. So it just does a really good job of when you do make that leap, when you go into other parts of the world and see just how kind of the lengths that they go to, it's just like really rewarding by the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit with the characters. You're never really sure who's good, who's bad. Are they a little bit of both? There's also an element, like, this movie is packed with twists, and, like, you expect multiple twists in a whodunit, but they come at such an incredible pace. It really does, like, grab you by your shirt about, like, 30 to 40 minutes in, and it keeps throwing twists your way to the point where you even start to question, like, some of the main characters. Like, you're like, are you a good person? Like, am I following the right like, the only people that really stay, continue to do what they're supposed to be doing the whole time and, like, doing the right thing are the detectives along with Benoit Blanc. And even Benoit Blanc, you have a few moments where you're like, wait, is he actually, like, not that he's malicious, but, like, you know, he's the law. Is he the bad guy because he's the law? Are we actually rooting for the bad guy? And he's, even though he's the good guy, he's the bad guy?
I mean, he does just kind of show up, you know, with an envelope full of money.
I don't know who hired me.
Foghorn Leghorn's here to solve a murder.
I was doing some reading in the old IMDb trivia page before this, and apparently Daniel Craig was just told that Benoit Blanc was a Southerner and nothing past that. And he showed up to the, like, it was supposed to be like a slight Southern accent, and he showed up doing that, like, the, like, what is that, a Charleston accent or something like that? You know, kind of like the...
Yeah, well...
Oh, Savannah. That's the whole, there's been a murder in Savannah.
In Savannah, yeah.
But he, like, he came in doing that, and I guess Ryan Johnson was just enamored with it. He was like, oh my God, I didn't know that that's what we needed. But Daniel Craig said he was... I lost the name. There's some historian that I guess was pretty well known at some point. And that is how that historian sounds. And Benoit Blanc, or sorry, Daniel Craig, just kept listening to clips of the historian. The historian's name is Shelby Foote, spelled F-O-O-T-E. But he liked the way he talked and just started mimicking it, and it worked really well for him.
Wow.
So, yeah, he stuck with it. There was a lot of... Daniel Craig did a cool job in this. They were also saying towards the end that Daniel Craig memorized, like, the last 30 pages of the script, which is, like, you know, it's the end of a whodunit. The detective is breaking down what happened. And Daniel Craig apparently memorized, like, the last 30 pages, which is almost exclusively monologuing for him. And Ryan Johnson had originally planned to shoot it in small, like, clips and cut it all together. But Daniel Craig had the lines down so well that Ryan Johnson just started doing long shots. And he said the longer he filmed Daniel Craig, the harder Daniel would fall into character and just nail it better and better. So, like, those last scenes of the movie are just, like, Ryan... I like to just picture Ryan Johnson behind the camera just like, oh, my God, he's doing it. He's going for the whole thing right now.
Dang.
I'm geeking out a little bit, if you can't tell.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. Because, like, you do want to see it as, like, the long shot. Like, that's... feel like it just feels, like, natural.
Right, and, like, there are these, like, you know, these big, long kind of rants on, like, what happened, and it's exciting. You're, like, it's like you're tumbling down a hill and picking up speed. You're just like, oh, my God, yeah, and then this, and then that, and, like, you're starting to put it together along with him, but then he'll ask a question, you're like, I don't know the answer to that question, which, at this point, I'm just describing, like, a really good whodunit, not necessarily just Knives Out, but, like...
Yeah.
I love... Ryan Johnson, I think, did a great job of taking that classic whodunit formula and, like, giving it enough updates, enough twists. We didn't even talk about the fact that Ana de Armas' character can't tell a lie without puking. She gets physically sick if she lies.
Oh, that's so true, yeah.
Such a hilarious twist on a whodunit that one of the main people physically can't lie. Like, that's so good. And he just, like, he throws these little twists into the old formula, but it still fits within the old formula, which is a really fun formula. Like, I watched, Barnes, have you ever watched Murder on the Orient Express, the most recent one?
No.
It's a fine movie, but, like, I'm just a sucker for a whodunit, and I really have never, I've never read or watched any of the old, you know, Murder on the Orient Express. And it's just, it's so much fun to watch a detective at the end break down the mystery. Like, that is just a thrill. At the risk of me over-talking here, I just want to say, I really hope, and I think they are planning on doing a sequel to this movie. Like, it's been approved.
Yeah,
like
a Greenland, yeah.
I would truly love, like, I hesitate to use the word cinematic universe, but I would love to watch, like, very much like Agatha Christie had, I think her detective was Hercule Poirot, right? Was the guy in multiple of her novels.
Yeah.
And, like, Sherlock Holmes, right? These detectives always had multiple books. And I would love if the modern-day incarnation of that is just, like, three or four really good Benoit Blanc mystery movies. That would be so much fun to me.
I just keep watching him.
Yeah, and he's, like, the only consistent character throughout him. It's always a different cast, but Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc is always there. Like, at the risk of sounding gushy, I think he has a cool spot in, like, the canon of fictional detectives. Like, he's up there with the Hercule Poirot and the Sherlock Holmes for me.
Yeah. I think, also, one fun fact is that the movie does feature Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who we didn't mention, because he has been in every single one of Rian Johnson's movies, and he's like a voice on like a TV at one point in the background. Incredibly obscure.
I think he plays the detective in the soap opera that Ana de Armas' sister is watching throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me this the other day. What's Joseph Gordon-Levitt been doing lately? You haven't heard about him in a few years.
That's true. He was supposed to be Robin, and then that's it. His movie career ended.
Yeah, I'm just looking. He's a voice in Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Right.
And
of course, Rian Johnson.
The most recent thing that I recognize, there's a few other things that I've never heard of. The most recent thing I recognize for him is 2016's Snowden, where he played Edward Snowden, which I didn't even realize he was the one who played Snowden in that movie.
Okay. I think he had that moment where he was like the lead. Remember that one? He's like the New Yorker with the white tank, and he's got like, is that Scarlett Johansson in the movie with
him? Yeah, Don John. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they just didn't take. I don't know.
He was in Don John. Well, then he wanted to get, we're going down a rabbit hole, but he wanted to do, he really wanted to get into, like, production. Like, he started his own production company, and I know they had, like, an online thing where anybody could post, like, their own online, like, shorts and stuff like that. It was, like, a platform for artists, but I don't think that really ever went anywhere, and, I mean, he really hasn't been, he did Don John and Lincoln, right, at like this, and Looper all around the same time.
Yeah, Looper.
And then he was a bit part in the sequel to Sin City. He had an uncredited cameo in The Interview with Seth Rogen. He's in an episode of The Mindy Project, and then he just kind of, I don't know, he does a few little things here and there. Weird. Weird. Not what you expect out of him.
Yeah.
Anyway, Knives Out. Barnes, I feel bad. I've absolutely dominated this conversation. I want to open the floor to you before we look towards wrapping it up.
No. I think you saw it more recently than me too, though. But so sometimes, you know, when dogs got to eat, you know, horses got to ride, whatever the saying is. Sometimes
fish got to swim, birds got to eat.
Exactly. I think it's interesting. So have you watched it twice?
Well, so I watched it in theaters 1.5 times, and then I watched the first 20 minutes again very recently, but I was very tired and fell asleep before getting to the, like, really juicy parts.
So you watched
the first
half 3 times.
I've watched the first half, the first 30 minutes I've watched three times, and I've seen the last hour and 25 minutes once.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I have intimate knowledge of the first 30 minutes.
That's the last thing on my mind, and something I still have to do is to rewatch it now knowing everything and seeing how that changes my impression of the movie. But I get the feeling that it's been just long enough too where I'm gonna pick up on new things, but still just it has like just a genuine sense of joy, like when everything comes together, that I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that it's actually, for a whodunit where you know the ending, still a very rewatchable movie.
Yeah, I get that vibe too. I've heard a few people have told me that there are a lot of like little things you can catch, kind of like what Edgar Wright does in his movies, where if you pay close attention, he like foreshadows a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
I didn't notice those, but I also wasn't, I was again very tired, so I wasn't looking super hard. But there was one, actually I won't say it because I don't want to spoil the movie, but somebody said like you can catch that Benoit Blanc is doing something, I'll tell you after the podcast, Barnes, is doing something the entire movie that foreshadows the ending of the movie big time.
Okay.
So, we'll see. I actually was hoping to get another watch-in of it before we recorded this, and I didn't get the chance, but the hype train's been rolling in my brain, so I'll probably put it on while I'm working from home one of these days. Ooh. Theft of time, baby.
Yeah, WFO. Oh, no, WFH. Sorry.
One of my favorite activities.
Yeah.
Time theft, not working from home.
Any final thoughts then for the film at this point?
Yeah, my final thoughts are there's not a lot of whodunits that get made anymore, especially not original ones, but this one takes the cake. Best one I've seen in a very, very long time. Benoit Blanc, I love him. I think to myself all the time about his speech about Gravity's Rainbow, and how he is merely an arc of a projectile that aims towards the truth. That was such a cool line to me. And then the donut hole thing, of course, for anybody who's watched the movie, is just an absolute hilarious moment.
Yeah.
But, I really love this movie. So one of our friends asked us to do asked me to do a top 10 movies of the 2000s so far, of 2000, the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
And Knives Out made my list right at the very end of 2019. So
what was number one?
I think I just deleted the list the other day. I found it on my phone and, I found it. I didn't do it in any particular order, but, I think Short-Term 12 might have been my number one.
That's wonderful.
Yep.
That is strong.
Really good stuff. Barnes, how about your final thoughts?
Speaking of the donut hole, just makes me think about how, again, for a whodunit, it is just a genuinely funny movie. I think they do a really good job of mixing in the comedy with it, and it makes complete sense why Benoit Blanc can have a very successful movie career, going from mystery to mystery as this kind of privately hired detective. It's deserving of all of its praise. I think it was genuinely just a brilliant movie by a great director with a great cast. Sometimes those kind of movies where it's like you just go off of star power alone and hope that it gets people's butts in the seats in terms of profit, but it also just crushed in terms of its quality and its engineering. And I am very excited. It just makes you wanting to get more. Just more movies, more whodunits, more from what they made here. So I am just eager and excited for the next installment.
Yeah. If I can tack one thing on, I think Rian Johnson is part of a select group of directors, well, really writer-directors for me, that I think they have found a way to make truly original pieces of work in the modern Hollywood landscape, which is not easy to do. That's with people like Jordan Peele. I feel like I always mess up how to say her last name, but Ava DuVernay. Am I saying that right? Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that's right. Ava DuVernay makes a lot of really cool movies. Christopher Nolan, you could make your criticisms of him, but the guy makes what he wants to make, which I think is very cool. And Edgar Wright.
Ryan Coogler, love his work.
Yeah, Ryan Coogler. Like, it's kind of this crop of actors that have really like found a niche, and they're making what seems to be the movies they really want to make, and they get me very excited. So like Rian Johnson is just somebody that when their name comes up, I'm gonna be into it. I also need to correct myself earlier. I do love Short Term 12. I think Mad Max Fury Road is my number one movie of the 2010s. I couldn't end the podcast without correcting myself.
Oh my gosh, Furiosa.
Barnes, let's say some thank yous. Thank you to Adam Scove for our wonderful music. Thank you to Alex Moore for our wonderful graphics. We've been saying it for 6 years now, and I stand by it every single day.
Every day.
Barnes, do we want to take a shot in the dark at what's next, or we want to leave them guessing?
Maybe we'll leave them guessing? Is that fair?
I think we leave them guessing. Yeah. Folks, for you at home, me and Barnes are doing something different with the recordings. We're recording in kind of whatever order, and we're recording them across many months. So this might be irregular. We just leave you hanging, and whatever happens, happens, and you're going to have to live with it and ride by the seat of our pants.
Season 4 is just, we're just putting everything on shuffle, okay?
Yep. The 2020 has already been very chaotic, and we're just looking to follow that theme, continuing the chaos. You never know what's going to happen.
Yes.
But we have a lot of things. I think we're both very excited. A lot of things we both did, a lot of things we did individually that we're now sharing with each other. I'm kind of excited, Barnes. We're going to get back to our roots a little bit with some like real indie video games, which I feel like we did a lot early on, and we kind of strayed away from over the last 2 seasons, and I'm excited to get back into those.
Yeah, we got some homework for each other. It's fun.
We do, yeah, and some really good, some very tantalizing homework.
Absolutely. I got a book coming in the mail, I think, tomorrow, and then woo-hoo. I'm just waiting for a good old-fashioned sale for my indie game.
Yep, and I got I'm working on one indie game right now. I think Barnes and I like halfway through it. I think
yeah,
I beat the fourth
yeah,
level.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So probably halfway through that, and I've also got a book from one of our authors that we probably talk the most about on the podcast.
Probably. So. Yeah, probably.
But yeah, that's all we got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. That's the final thank you, and we hope you have a wonderful night. Goodbye.
Bye. All right.